Glory, hallelujah.
Glory, glory, hallelujah. Glory, glory, hallelujah. As we go marching on,
we are calling soldiers who have enlisted for the war.
Fighting for the union,
we are fighting for the Lord.
The nations to
the rebel father,
and a white man ever saw. As we go marching on,
look there above the center,
where the flag is waving bright.
We are going out
slaving,
we are bound for freedom.
Show Jeff Davis
how the Africans can fight
as we go.
Recording in progress.
Okay, welcome.
And the message has been sent. The prison doors have opened, and out the prisoners went to join the slave army.
DC. This is Joni. We have a very, 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 very exciting show for you in store today. Of course, this is the last Monday of our pledge drive. We have a goal to make. I just want to introduce our magnificent guest. Dr. Linda Ray Murray is a world-renowned public health champion and advocate locally and nationally. She has been my health hero for many, many decades, actually since the 1970s. She's a past president of the American Public Health Association. She was the past chief medical officer at Cook County Department of Health. She is currently the faculty at the University of Illinois, Chicago, of Public Health, and she has been the she co-chaired Chicago's Mayor Brandon Johnson's transition team on health and human services. That's just a smidgen of what Dr. Linda Ray Murray has done. She's going to be talking about our theme for today, resistance. And Chicago chooses resistance and justice over compliance, and giving us the history, not only of what's happened in the last month, but in 1850 as well. So, again, we have a pledge. We have a goal of $700. You can start us right now by calling 202-588-9739. And with that said, welcome, Dr. Linda Ray Murray.
Good morning, everyone.
Going all the way from Chicago. So we could spend the whole day with you, but we have about an hour. Tell us, start out with what's been happening in Chicago in the last month, and then we're going to jump to the Fugitive Slave Act in 1850 and how these two things are interrelated. But for people who do not know some of what's happened in Chicago, of course, you are the center of resistance in this country, but tell our listeners a little bit about Chicago, maybe starting with this weekend, but certainly the past month.
Well, like much of the rest of the country, Chicago had a great turnout for this second No Kings Day, with estimates of around 250,000 people in our downtown area. But many communities also had smaller events, more child-friendly events. I know on the north side and south side there were those. I think this is just part of the long tradition in Chicago, a center for labor and the labor movement, a center for civil rights. And so this is fits in with our history. We're fortunate here to have a mayor that opposes this insanity that is going on in D.C., county level officials that actively oppose Trump, and of course our governor, J.B. Pritzker, has been in the forefront opposing the militarization of our city and state.
Yes,
so I think that fits in with our history.
Absolutely. And tell our listeners a little bit about some of the really frightening things that have happened in Chicago just in the last month. Federal agents storming a South Shore apartment complex by helicopter. And a little bit, definitely tell us about what happened with at the hospital. Well, you tell us the stories of what happened.
Well, yeah, and let me just go back just a little bit earlier than in the past month or two. I want to remind people that Chicago is one of the recipients of a really cruel act from the Governor Abbott in Texas to take people crossing our southern border and put them in buses with no paying attention to what they wanted and shipping them off to other parts of the country. So Chicago received during that summer a few years ago a number, tens of thousands of immigrants who had crossed the southern border. The largest single group came from Venezuela, but from all around the world. And so that really put a strain on our normal resources in the city. And it also tried to do what he wants to accomplish, is divide the American people. And so there were Chicago communities that were under strain. And this is really how, as health professionals, we got involved in this. We wanted to make sure that people understood that there are certain basic courtesies and resources that everyone needs because they're living and breathing, because they're human beings. And this attempt to divide Americans and people in the world by country and nationality is not good. We're also the home of really the modern immigration rights movement here in Chicago that goes back a couple of decades. But to come up to more recent time periods, we've been singled out by President Trump as a place out of control, a place that, if you believe him, is lawless and where we have insurrections. You know, I live and work on the south side of Chicago. My home is just a few minutes away from the really attack on a black community. So throughout our city, in all communities, and in many, many, many of our suburbs, we have community organizations, volunteers looking out for ICE and for federal law enforcement. And when this happens, they're formed in networks and they alert people that ICE is at this place, ICE is at that place. We've had ICE outside of schools, frightening children. Recently, ICE actually, in one of our suburban people, shot and killed a woman. They pretend that anyone exercising their rights to record what they're doing or asking basic questions are somehow attacking them. The two incidents that really disturbed me as a physician was what happened in a number of our hospitals. There was a ICE team that kidnapped someone in Chicago, and in the process of catching him, he broke his leg. And so they took him to one of our local community hospitals. Again, as this network of citizens and community members alerted people, the alderperson, Alderman Jesse Fuentes, went to the hospital again to guarantee that that person had their basic rights respected, and was in the process of asking the ICE agents whether or not they had a warrant, a legal judicial warrant, for the person that they had in custody. She never raised her voice. She never used profanity. She was polite and never touched any of them. Nonetheless, they decided to grab her, put her hands behind her back, handcuff her, and march her out of the hospital. So again, this attack on one of our elected officials is just inexcusable. We've had a number of instances where our federally elected officials, congresspeople and senators, who have a legal right to inspect any federal facility, including ICE facilities, have been repeatedly turned away from an ICE facility in Broadview, where there have been regular demonstrations against that facility. People just disappear in there as a black box. No one is able to contact them. They're not able to have legal representation. What's going on is, I think, illegal, but in any case, is criminal. In South Shore, again, just a few minutes from my family home, we had an apartment building, unfortunately not a very well-run apartment building, with I think maybe 100 apartments in there. And in that apartment building were poor, working-class black people and a number of immigrants from different countries. And so at 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, just like it was a grade B military movie, people heard helicopters above their heads. Black Hawk helicopters hovered over this building. Federal agents rappelled down the ropes to the roof of the building. Flashbang grenades were used to break open the doors of the building. And then they proceeded throughout the building to break down most apartment doors in the middle of the night, rouse people out of their beds, march them outside. No matter how they were dressed, some people were semi-dressed, some people were reportedly naked. This included children. They zip-tied the people that they marched out, again, not paying attention to anything. They had no judicial warrants at all. They tried to separate the people that they thought were immigrants and people that they thought weren't immigrants. And they separated them. They put them in trucks. And so for many black members there of the community, they had to stay in these trucks for 3 or 4 hours while ICE played games. No apologies, no protection of people's personal belongings in the building. Again, just a criminal disruption and a violation of people's rights, everyone's rights, whether they were citizens or not. But certainly to have that kind of police, we haven't seen something like that since MOVE, to be honest with you, to have that kind of attack on an American residential neighborhood, again, it's just inexcusable.
Absolutely. Again, you're listening to Dr. Linda Ray Murray, world-renowned public health champion and advocate both locally in Chicago and nationally, talking about what has been happening in Chicago, but that this isn't the first time. And we're going to jump now back to 1850 and talk a little bit about the Fugitive Slave Act and how what happened in 1850 and Chicago's response to that.
Well, again, I think it's easy. When we're faced with these kinds of challenges today, it's easy to think this is the first time it's happened. And in fact, one of the things that I find personally irritating is that so many of my friends and on the TV news, etc., people are saying, oh, this is unprecedented. It's unprecedented that the Supreme Court has reversed a decision on this. Well, it's not unprecedented. There's a long history in this country of a fight between people trying to restrict people's rights and those trying to expand American democracy. And so the Fugitive Slave Act, just to remind people, in the 1790s, and basically what it said is, if you were a slave, if you were enslaved in the United States of America, you're a slave owner. And for if you escape slavery, you're basically stealing yourself, but stealing from your owner, and people were obligated to help your owner recover his property. Now, that didn't work very well. It became more and more difficult to enforce that. So in 1850, Congress passed the Fugitive Slave Act, and it strengthened this rule, and it said that everyone in the country, all American citizens, were required to follow the rules of this act. Citizens were required to help slave catchers catch slaves, that if you were caught as a non-slave, as a white person in this country, aiding a slave, you would be fined $1,000. Now, let me be clear. That's $1,000 in 18. $1,000 is a lot of money now, but think about how much money that was in 1850. When people who were enslaved were captured by these slave catchers, there was no attempt to pay attention to whether they were in fact enslaved or emancipated. They were free. Their papers were ignored. They did not have the right to appear before these commissioners that would decide that you're a slave and you have to go back to your owner. They weren't allowed to testify. There was no legal protections. There was no legal. There was no basic thing to say, no, I'm not a slave or anything. And so in the northern part of the country, many communities disagreed with this approach. Some states actually passed laws called personal liberty laws that basically said, we're not going to honor the Fugitive Slave Act. This is very much like our sanctuary cities and states today.
Mm-hmm.
So in 1850, the Chicago City Council passed an ordinance that said, we are not recognizing the Fugitive Slave Act. We are not going to aid slave catchers in catching people in our city and trying to take them back to slavery. When we find a slave catcher here, we're going to have them leave the city. This was voted on twice by the city council. And just like today in the black community, it was a small black community in 1850, but the black community organized through the churches. They formed vigilance committees to keep an eye and warn the community when slave catchers were around, and they formed a resistance to protect the black community from slave catchers coming in and grabbing black people off the street, whether they had been formally emancipated or just escaped slavery. And so that history of resistance is important.
And we have to right
and
now.
It mirrors what's going on today.
Absolutely, and we'll going to be coming back to our discussion in a moment. It's time for us to take a little pitch break. I can't see who's on with us. I don't know if Frank Smith.
Joni, what? You come on now. Didn't I promise I'm right here?
Well, no, I was just checking to see if Frank Smith was also on and could join us in a few minutes, because I can't see. But we have our fabulous Katia Smith joining us right now. I'm very proud of Katia and everything she's done, among many, many other things, as an outstanding two-hour programming on Saturday with No Kings right here in Washington, D.C. But Katia, I'm so happy you're on with me now to help encourage listeners to make a pledge for this show and for this radio station. And in honor of our very special guest, Dr. Linda Ray Murray, who's been my champion since I was extremely young. she's a wonderful advocate, as you can tell. So, Katia, how can people pledge today?
Well, we have someone to thank. We have a board member, WPFW board member, Michelle Tingling Clemens. Thank you so much, Michelle, for getting us started. And we have $620 to go, folks. 800-222-9739, WPFWFM.org. You may have noticed that the goals have increased because we really tried to shorten the pledge drive to 2 weeks. We are honoring that. We heard you and we're trying to do that. So please help us with this effort. This show is incredible. Chicago, I have to say, is on fire. I love watching that mayor on Instagram just shut it down every single time. And this is the resistance that we need. Of course, Dr. Linda Ray Murray is an iconic hero to many of us. And we're so enthused and honored to have her on. Thank you, Joni, for bringing her on. And thank you, Dr. Murray, for all the great work that you have done. Chicago has a special place in my heart. The number to call again in honor of this program, but really all the wonderful programming and insightful and relevant programming that To Heal DC has done and Joni Eisenberg has done over these decades. Pledge in support of that. The number to call, 800-222-9739, WPFWFM.org. This morning, like many other mornings, you're getting liberatory, educational, emancipatory information. That is what WPFW gives you. That is what Joni and Chuck give you every Monday morning on To Heal DC, and it is well worth your dollars to support it. 800-222-9739, WPFWFM.org. These are the two ways that you can pledge so that we can thank you on the air and acknowledge your pledge. You can also, of course, always go to text to donate, 801. You text to 801-801 and you simply text WPFW. And then you can also go on Cash App, and that is $ WPFWFM. So these
and
are the ways
I would
you
like
can,
to encourage to mm-hmm. people to use options other than Cash App. We had a big Cash App donation last week that didn't come through, so we still are behind in our role to bring in support for WPFW. So I want to encourage people to either use the telephone or the website, or you can give us that other phone number, I guess. That's pretty automatic, right?
Right, the texting. Yes, you can use your phone. And actually, if you're online listening right now on the app, you can hit that heart that is in the lower left-hand corner of the app and make your donation that way. Make sure that To Heal DC is chosen when you make that donation. And that will also come up so we can see it and thank you. 800-222-9739, WPFWFM.org are the ways to connect and the ways to support the excellent work that not only Joni is doing, but the excellent work that Dr. Murray is doing in and has been doing for decades in the Chicago community. Very important. And it ties right into the liberatory work that we do here at WPFW. So make the call, make the click that makes the difference. $620 to go. We can do this together.
Absolutely. Thank you, Katia. And we'll be talking again in a few minutes. If someone can help me, is Dr. Frank Smith on the line?
Yes, I am.
Oh, okay, great. So, of course, Frank Smith should need no introduction to listeners. He is the founder of the African American Civil War Museum right here in Washington, D.C. He is a veteran of SNCC and much, much more. So, Frank, I thought you might have some words to share about the Fugitive Slave Act of 1850, what happened in the resistance that took place in Chicago. And the resistance how that's linked to the resistance that Chicago is carrying out now. But anything you might like to add about the Fugitive Slave Act?
Well, first of all, Johnny, let me thank you very much and WPFW for keeping hope alive in D.C. and across the country. And so I'm happy to be. And also say hello to my relatives out there in Chicago. I was born in Georgia, and my dad's family, seven of his brothers and sisters moved to Chicago. Actually, my dad went there for a while, but I'd been born already, and my mother resisted. She wouldn't go, so he came back because he needed to take care of his family. So I've got more relatives there, and of course, I was in Mississippi in the Civil Rights Movement, and Mississippi used to empty itself every June of all the high school graduates on that way to Chicago. So on behalf of the half of the population of Chicago from Mississippi and Georgia, I want to say hello and thank you. I read your piece, Dr. Clemons, and I wanted to just say that I watched last week the Supreme Court debating issues related to the 15th Amendment, which is voting rights, and then it went back to the 14th Amendment, and this Justice Kavanaugh, I believe it was, said he thought that those amendments should have an expiration date on them, and of course one of them is voting rights, where voting rights is in the 15th Amendment. The 14th Amendment establishes citizenship for Black people in the United States. We've been here for all over many years, but we were not citizens. And it didn't become citizens until the 14th Amendment to the Constitution. So how easy and how cavalier these people are discussing our freedom and our citizenship here in this country is really disturbing to me. And then secondly, of course, we see it being played out in our streets here in Washington and in Chicago and other places as these people, some of whom not even in uniform, wearing masks like hoodlums. Out here in our streets, just running up on people, jumping out on them, and taking them off. We don't even know where they're taking some of them, and they don't know until they land whether they're being taken to Nicaragua or being taken to I don't know some other place. So it's a frightening time for all of us. And let me just I just end with a quote from Angela Davis, who says, "They come after me in the morning, they come after you at night." So all of us, and I'm sure Black people are all scared of this thing because we figure, you know what, we're going to be next if we don't find a way to stop this. And I think that's why so many people are demonstrating. And I was out there Saturday with my arthritic knees and bad back and, you know, walking with a little bit of limp, but I'm trying to help save this country and help save our people. And that's what we all have to do here in these troubled times.
Yes, and we'd like to, of course, announce that Frank's Museum is going to be reopening. I think the day may still be November 11th, and you'll be hearing more about that. One of the very special, wonderful things that we have in Washington, D.C. is the African-American Civil War Museum. So, Frank, you can hang on there with us. Let's jump back to Dr. Linda Ray Murray and talk a little bit more, Dr. Murray, about we're going to move into actually discussing the healthcare crisis. But before we go there, perhaps a little bit more about the mayor of Chicago. And I think you could talk about a model policy that you all have been working on to perhaps that could be used in other cities. But before we move into healthcare, anything else you would like to say about what's happening in Chicago in the streets?
I think there's no question, and I think the King's Day, No Kings demonstration had all of our politicians, our congresspeople, the mayor, the governor up on stage. I want to remind people that, you know, after 1850, the first Black mayor of the city of Chicago, Mayor Harold Washington, passed an executive order in 1985 declaring Chicago a sanctuary city. Again, with the same notion that we would not participate in doing immigration enforcement on behalf of the federal government. And every single mayor since Harold Washington has reaffirmed that sanctuary city policy. Our present mayor is taking it even further, I think, by calling on unity amongst all Chicagoans. I think that's a critical thing. We should be clear. Not only, as my brother just said, are they coming for us? Well, they never stop coming for us, first of all, but not only are they coming for the Black community, but this is an effort to drive a wedge between our communities. In a city like Chicago, a city of immigrants, that's a dangerous thing. And I think Black people need to remember that in the transatlantic slave trade, people who were stolen from the mother country and brought across the Atlantic, only 5% of those enslaved people ended up in the British colonies. The other 95% ended up in the Caribbean, in what's now Venezuela, Colombia, Mexico, with the largest single grouping going to Brazil. So when you really think about, this is a really question of family reunion. When you look at Venezuelans, for example, in that building, many of them look exactly like me and my relatives because we are relatives. And so I think that we have to understand that these efforts to artificially divide us, where the president says he's going after the worst of the worst criminals. Well, Black people should understand what that means, because to be Black in America is to be considered a criminal. So the reality is they're going after hardworking human beings who are just trying to feed their families and live their lives. And so we have to stand up against that kind of craziness. This, of course, extends to healthcare. We live in a country where people die every day because they can't get basic healthcare. They may die fast because perhaps they have an accident and they don't have access to a hospital right away. But most of us die slowly because we don't have our high blood pressure treated or our diabetes or other chronic diseases. So what we were asking for in that editorial, my co-writer with me, Dr. Claudia Fagan, who was until very recently the chief medical officer for Cook County Health, what we were asking for is for the hospitals and health centers in our city to come together and say, we are not going to allow ICE to run rampant through the halls of our institutions to arrest people. If they have people in custody, there are certain rules that we have in place as physicians, nurses, and healthcare workers. You cannot be present when the person is being examined. You can't shackle them to the beds. Just basic humanity, basic approach, treating people like human beings and not animals. So this is something that medical professionals have argued for throughout the history, and certainly here in Chicago, where we have experience working with police authorities and people who are incarcerated, there are still certain rights that they have, and you want their privacy and dignity respected at all times. So that's really what we're calling for the Hospital Association, for our organizations to stand up united the way the politicians have stood up, the way working mothers have stood up, the way our teachers' unions have stood up and say, no, we're going to treat everyone in our city, in our state, with basic respect.
Absolutely. And I'm not sure if Dr. Edwin Chapman is on the line, another advocate for health care in this city and this country. Dr. Chapman, somebody can help me, let me know if he is on. But of course, we good morning, Stand Dr. by. Chapman.
Hi, Joni.
Yes, glad you could join us and glad you could meet Dr. Linda Ray Murray. And as we know, we're in an ongoing fight for universal health care in this country. Make any comment you would like now about the health care situation in D.C. or what Dr. Murray was talking about. And now is certainly the time to intensify our organizing for universal health care. And I'll ask Dr. Murray to kind of summarize, or maybe you can, Dr. Chapman, some of the threats that many of us already know are coming down the pike when it comes to basic access to health care. So anything you'd like to add, Dr. Chapman?
So, Joni, this is an absolute honor to be on line with Dr. Murray and former Councilman Frank Smith. I grew up in Gary, Indiana, I left in 1964 to come to Washington to undergrad school and medical school at Howard University. And I actually trained under ICONS, as you know, at Old Freedmen's Hospital and then the Howard University Hospital. So our legacy is about DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion. My father was the first executive director of the Urban League in Gary, Indiana, from 1945 to 1949. And in that effort, he had to fight for African-American physicians to get access or medical privileges at the two hospitals in Gary. And he did that through working with experts from Howard University, as you know. Dr. Paul Cornelli actually came to Gary and made an assessment from Howard University and said that they did not need to build a separate black hospital. They needed to allow physicians, qualified physicians, to admit their patients to the two hospitals in Gary. And that actually happened in 1947. So today, our fight, obviously, with these draconian efforts to make work requirements for Medicaid, to remove people from Medicaid systematically, is really murder by public policy. And we're doing everything that we can to fight against that.
Yeah. And let's tell our listeners, Dr. Linda Ray Murray, help remind them who Dr. Paul Cornelli is. I'm going to say is because his spirit is very much with us, certainly an icon in public health right here, spent many decades right here with us in Washington, D.C., was on this show many, many times. But certainly Dr. Cornelli played a critical role in many arenas, and one is in 1963, I think, Dr. Murray, the March on Washington, when the National Medical Association and I believe the Medical Committee for Human Rights made a major focus on the need to have a national healthcare system, including Medicare and Medicaid. So perhaps, Dr. Murray, you could share for a moment. We have about 2 minutes before the break. The lessons from the past of how we have been organizing for universal health care, but still have a ways to go.
Well, Dr. Cornelli is such an outstanding leader, and the very fact that he was based in Washington at the great Howard University, it helps and helped recreate himself over decades. He's really the first black man to get a PhD, for example, from the University of Michigan, while he got an MD, a first one to get a doctorate in public health, a DRPH in public health. He was really a leader, national leader in public health. He was a leader of our organization, the National Medical Association, the organization of black physicians in this country, and also a leader of the American. He was the first black president of the American Public Health Association. So he really brings together these two worlds, the leadership among black health professionals and the effort to try to make sure that all Americans, everyone residing within our boundaries and frankly around the world, have health care. And it's such a pleasure, as always, to meet colleagues from Howard and Dr. Chapman, especially. And so I think we have a long tradition of speaking up for what's right, and Dr. Cornelli is certainly a key leader in that.
Absolutely. And Dr. Murray, we need to continue to make sure that our current leaders, as wonderful as many of them are, the National Medical Association, know about Dr. Paul Cornelli, because I'm finding many do not. But we can keep his spirit. And again, he was very much a part of this radio station and this show. And as we have been saying for decades, we've been organizing for universal health care in this country really since the end of the Civil War, if I'm not mistaken, certainly at the turn of the century, and we still have a ways to go, more urgent than ever, perhaps. And Katia, are you there with me?
It's time. I'm right here, and I want to thank I want to thank a friend out of Washington, D.C. Thank you so much for your ongoing support of Joni and WPFW. We so appreciate it. We are down to $520, folks. We got 20 minutes to do it. We can do it together. We say it all the time, and I'm sure both of these public health advocates, as well as Frank Smith, being a historian, will vouch to the fact that many hands do indeed make light work, and that we keep us safe and we get us free. So this is a way that you can support truly independent media, bringing you information to help get you free, get all of us free. The number to call, 800-222-9739. Let's support the good work that Joni Eisenberg and Chuck Hicks do every Monday, 10 to 11 a.m. with To Heal DC. $520 to go, 800-222-9739, WPFWFM.org. It is critical right now to support outlets like WPFW because, frankly, we are under attack. We are under attack. While we don't receive governmental or corporate funds, we are still in the sights of this administration because of us talking or saying, excuse me, because of us speaking truth about power. And they never like that. You know, they haven't come after us yet, but we don't know when that's going to happen. What we do know is that we are unrelenting and we are unafraid. So Joni is unafraid and she does the good work for the people. 800-222-9739, WPFWFM.org, $520 to go. We can do this together. We want to make Joni proud and happy. We have 18 minutes and I know she has more content. So please, 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 make that call or that click that makes the difference, 800-222-9739 or WPFWFM.org are the ways to connect. $520 to go. Joni?
Yes, and listeners may not know that Pacifica was actually mentioned in Project 2025 by the Trump team going back for many decades. They were planning what they're carrying out now. So even though it may not be exactly the same, they definitely have their eyes on us. So now is the time to really pledge. We unfortunately did not come close to meeting our goal last week. We had a commitment that hopefully will still be fulfilled, but we're behind, and the station is a little bit behind, but we know that with your support, we can get right back to where we need to be to keep this radio station strong and on the air. Again, 800-222-9739. You can make a pledge. You don't have to pay for it all now. You can request the payment in installments or whatever way you're able to do that. And now we're jumping right back to our wonderful guest, Dr. Linda Ray Murray, calling us from Chicago. And Dr. Murray, so continue, as of course you've been involved for decades on the fight for universal health care. I don't know if you have any new insights you may want to share of how do we strengthen that movement right now when health care is going to be attacked even more than it already has. A lot of states, I believe, are in danger of losing Medicaid. Medicaid is controlled by the states, not by the federal agencies, but any new insights on how we can strengthen the movement for universal health care today?
Well, I don't know about new insights. I will say this. In these time periods, it's critical that all of us be clear and state clearly what we need and want. Let me give you some examples. A few years ago, the Supreme Court, again, attacked what we used to call affirmative action. And since that court decision in 22 or 23, I can't remember exactly which year, we've seen double-digit decreases. Let me say that again. Double-digit decreases in how many students of color, Black students, brown, Latino students, and Native American students are entering medical school. So this attack is ongoing. And so just with that Supreme Court decision, it's already impacted the admissions to our medical schools, and we can expect that to continue. We should support organizations that exist. The National Medical Association, we just had our national convention this summer in Chicago, and our new president hails from Howard University.
Yes, he does.
I think that we have to strengthen organizations like this radio station and others, our churches, our civic clubs, our fraternities, our sororities. We have to strengthen those organizations so that we are in a position to fight back. With health insurance, we have a horrible system in this country, and people die because of it. The present government shutdown, what the Democratic Party is saying, is they are trying to stop an increase in the Affordable Care Act premiums. Many people who have health insurance through the Affordable Care Act get the premiums subsidized. So we should be clear what that means. That means our private insurance companies continue to make money off of people's illness. And I've always supported a national health system, which is free at the point of service, that's supported by our tax dollars collectively, so that I'm healthy and working, and you might be sick 1 year or 1 month, and you get that care taken care of. Why? Because you're a human being. So what we need in this country, I support trying to support Medicaid. We're going to see severe cuts there. People are going to see severe cuts in Medicare as the Medicaid cuts roll out. So the healthcare system that we have in place is under attack. President Trump is trying to put $100,000 fee on every visa for people to come here and work. That impacts our health system and hospitals. We have many physicians that are trained abroad that come here to get special training. So our little crumbling safety net we have today is under attack. And in order for us to fight back, we don't want to just fight back to make it like it was in 2020 or 1980. We need to fight for what we need, so that people who live in this country have what many other people around the world have: basic freedoms, basic security and jobs that are safe, basic security and retirement. That's what we have to fight for. And we shouldn't be afraid to demand what, in fact, ourselves and our ancestors built. We built the wealth of this country and the wealth of the world. And the time has come for us to insist that that wealth is used to help human beings.
Absolutely. And I'd like to just quote Malcolm X, as we quote this often on this show. The only difference between illness and wellness is we. So we need to stand together for our health care rights and for basic rights of all human beings. And one way to do that, of course, is to support this station. Dr. Murray, we have a few minutes left with you. Maybe share a little bit more about what's happening in Chicago and the role of the mayor in standing up and speaking out against the oppression that's taking place, and how people such as yourself are collaborating and working with the mayor.
Well, I would put it a little differently. I would argue that the mayor, coming as he does out of labor, is working with the community. I don't think it's a question of having a leader, even if we elected him, and thinking we're working with him. Yes, that's happening. But more importantly, we need leaders who, in fact, come from our communities, understand our communities, and are taking direction from our communities. The reality is, in today's America, that it's not enough simply to have a mayor who speaks correctly, who says the right things, if they don't have the power to actually implement what's necessary. So because of how our city and state are structured, for example, the mayor has just brought to the city council a new budget, but it's a budget that he has to do with his hands handicapped, because we have structures in our city and state designed to protect the wealthy and designed to protect corporations, putting the needs of people last. So, for example, the mayor is a middle school teacher by training and comes out of our Chicago Teachers Union. But we chronically and deliberately and publicly underfund not only Chicago public schools, but many, many, many public schools in our state. We have a formula. I won't quibble about whether it's a good formula or not, but there's a formula that's been agreed upon at the state level of what we need to educate our children, and we're not meeting it. The same thing exists, of course, with health care. We know what we need to make sure that people with diabetes get treated. We know what we need to do to help prevent diabetes or strokes or heart attacks or so many other things, but we're not willing to put the investment in, not only in hospitals, but in good jobs and safe housing. We know how to keep people healthy, and we have to collectively as a society invest in our people. That's the thing that Brandon Johnson, our mayor, says over and over again. He wants to invest in the people of Chicago and not in the corporations of Chicago.
Absolutely. And real quick, Dr. Linda Ray Murray, if people, we mentioned the fact that you and Dr. Fagan published a very powerful op-ed. If listeners want to check that out, can you tell them how they might be able to see that article?
Well, I'm sure people are probably better at this than me. This was published in the Sun-Times, and so if you can Google the Sun-Times and find the op-ed written by Dr. Fagan and myself, it'll pop up. And again, I think it's a nice op-ed, but I think people, if they open their eyes and listen to your local, you had in D.C., we just had excellent guests from D.C. Everywhere in the country, you had not only physicians, but nurses, school teachers, construction workers speaking out for what is needed. So if we listen to each other and talk with each other and support one another, whether we're selling food on a street vending cart or whether we're in fact practicing in a hospital, we have the same interests. And if we listen to each other and support each other, we can turn this around and in fact take our country back.
Absolutely. And in 1 minute, just share with us the important role of labor in this
labor,
moment.
Historically, we haven't done anything without labor. Again, what does that mean in English? It means people coming together and supporting each other. That's all a labor union is, and that's what labor should fight for at its best. So if we come together and help support each other and our neighbors, our fellow workers, then I think we're in a position to win what we need to take care of ourselves, our families, and our communities.
Absolutely. And we are so proud and pleased that Dr. Linda Ray Murray could join us today, a hero for many of us out on the front lines fighting for health care for quite a long time. And we hope, Dr. Murray, that at some point in the future, we could bring you together with Dr. Roger Mitchell, who, as you mentioned, and some of our listeners know, was just elected the president of the National Medical Association, is very much right here with us in D.C. Dr. Chapman works with him, as do many of us. So hopefully we can, at some point, help bring the two of you together on the radio. Again, I want to thank everybody who did make a pledge. We still have
Joni.
Okay, great. And,
we want to say thank you to Vanessa out of Columbia, Maryland. Thank you so much. And Kim out of Bowie, Maryland says, keep up the work. Kim and Zaya, Saturday's Culture Shack. Aww. Love you, Joni. $370. Actually, I believe it's because this is not totaling correctly. We got another one. Wait, did we just get another one? No, something just changed. Oh, well. We have, I believe, $370 to go, folks. We can do this together. 7 minutes to do it, but you can keep the calls coming for To Heal DC after the top of the hour. Now 6 minutes, 800-222-9739, WPFWFM.org. And we heard Dr. Murray, of course, quoting the words of basically Assata Shakur. We must love each other. We must support each other. That is how this works. That is how unions work. That is how we all are able to be sustained. And there is equity in that that's sustaining. 800-222-9739, WPFWFM.org, $370 to go. Let's do this together, folks. Many hands making light work this morning to meet Joni Eisenberg's goal, to heal DC's goal. Let us not let her down. She gives so much to the people. Let's pour into her and give back to her now. $370 to go. We can do this. 800-222-9739 or WPFWFM.org. Joni?
Thank you, thank you, thank you. We didn't make the goal last week, but we're going to make it this week with your help. Thank you very much, Dr. Linda Ray Murray. Thank you, Frank Smith. Thank you, Edwin Chapman. And thank you, Zakiya, Mike Masella. And let's hear the end of this powerful song that we are playing.